Pacifico, Bill Hendrick.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. We go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. What is that place that we go to? Number one, unlike any other talk show in America, we can fill 3 hours with all kinds of phantasmagoria, satire, put-on, you name it. We don't need to do a regular talk show. As a matter of fact, we despise regular talk shows. That's not to say that we don't like the people that do them or we don't like the programmers. We're just saying that, you know, we're all capable of better, or at least I know I am, and I don't know about anybody else. And I would rather be cleaning toilets for a living than doing a traditional talk show. Let me repeat that. I'd rather be cleaning toilets for a living, except at certain people's houses, than doing a regular talk show.
Which people?
Yeah, I don't want to say, but a lot of them own radio companies. Now, I'm serious. I like the show we do, and I enjoy doing it every night. And I also enjoy standing the rest of the talk radio world on its head and making it look really like the refuge of jackballs that it is. Real, real dunces. You know, I told you that I had a meeting last week. I had a fantastic meeting with the kind of people that I like to meet with and the kind of people that I like to do business with. And what are those people? They're people involved in new media. They're people involved in the world of what has been traditionally referred to as the podcast. But in point of fact, it's much better. Podcast is such a stupid name that I would really advise any and all who are involved in the podcast world, including myself, because we do a podcast, let's find another name for it, because it sounds asinine and it doesn't do justice to what's happening. There's a revolution going on in the so-called spoken word format. There is a revolution going on in spoken word audio content kind of programming that has passed the radio world by. Radio is still sitting there with a thumb parked, like almost like the grand dame who lives in a house that has a hole in the roof, that has raccoons living in the attic, that has a weed problem, that has a plumbing problem, but she still imagines she lives in this marvelous mansion. That's radio. Sitting there in a decrepit and decaying house, while everybody else has built a whole new kind of domicile and is taking up residence in that. See? Now you say, well, Phil, why have I allowed? Let me tell you something. I've done everything that I possibly could do. Going back many years, I've done everything that I can do to say my piece with regard to this. I said it over and over and over again. I said you have to invest in content. You have to invest in talent. For you guys to keep on with this eroding sales model that you use, where you talk about brands. This term brand comes from the podcast world. It doesn't come from radio. Where are you guys in radio coming off with this stuff? Now, I just saw they're going to have the Marconi Awards. And who did I see? Who are the keynote speakers? The very people that have done absolutely nothing to improve the situation. They've done nothing to improve the situation within our industry. These jackasses have been invited to be the keynote speakers. I'd mention names, but hey, I got to eat, you know.
Yeah, you're afraid to.
All right, you know. I can only be a hero so far. But you know, I mean, they know I'm talking about them, if they listen to this show at all, which is highly doubtful because it's on very, very late, and they have to get their beauty rest. Now, having said all of that, you know, so I'm having lunch with these guys, and we're talking about this world of new media, the sales possibilities, how do you get this we've got 30 million Americans that are now listening to podcasts, and that's only getting bigger and bigger. And I, like I said, I hate the term podcast. I'd like to just, you know, program audio, you know, digital, the digital world of entertainment. These guys were saying, you know, we were back in New York at a talk radio convention of some kind. We went back there because they wanted to meet and greet and let these guys know what it is they were doing. And they said, but for the very first time, We saw guys tearing their hair out, 60-year-old guys doing talk shows on radio, tearing their hair out and wondering what the hell they're going to do and how they're going to make money and how they're going to compete, because all of a sudden it has dawned on these clowns, and the year is 2012, ladies and gentlemen. 2012, which means essentially it is about 6 to 7 years past the time they should have been thinking about this. 6 to 7 years past the time that they should have started thinking about this. So they're already 7 years behind the clock. And, oh, what am I going to, should I do a podcast too? Do you think that, yeah, there might be an audience of 30 million people. Yeah, I think maybe you might want to look into that. I don't know. I could be wrong. Radio making any money, man? You guys selling any advertising? How you guys doing, huh? How are those radio stations doing? How's that whole model doing? Well, suffice it to say, we had a pretty entertaining conversation about this, because these guys all of a sudden are waking up and they're not doing these asinine talk radio conventions. I used to go to these things. I've stopped. I won't go to another one because I don't want to leave another radio convention feeling like I want to blow my brains out. I can't do it anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. You know, I used to go to these radio conventions. I used to go to the NAB. I keynoted one year. Another year I did a panel, and I've been to these talk radio things, and I don't want to leave them any longer feeling suicidal, because every time I walk out of these things and get on a plane to come home, I feel like swallowing the barrel of a gun. I feel like, what am I wasting my time for? I've never been around so many clueless, self-destructive people. So I decided I'd swear it off, and I'm not missing anything, man. Now I find out from my friends, you know, we went back, because the last time I did a talk radio convention, instead of us talking about how can we make more money, how can we find more advertisers, how can we maximize the number of stations we're on, how can we, you know, maybe we ought to partner in and form smaller syndication, sort of smaller syndication belts so that we can regionally syndicate, you know, some just kind of brainstorming. No. Did we talk about that? Of course we didn't. What did they talk about? We were doing our shows for each other. We're talking about politics. It's not enough that we bore our listeners half to death with our uninformed, asinine opinions about politics. Now we go back to a talk radio convention and we're doing the same thing to each other. And when I did that, I saw that, I said, that's it. I'm done. I'm done, man. Well, now, come on, Phil. No, not come on, Phil, anything. I'm done. I'm never going back to another one of these as long as I live. But what about if you come at it? No, I said no, and I mean no. Over. And now I just, like I said last week, we're having lunch. They said, well, finally, we went to one of these things. These guys are actually talking now about, you know, what are they going to do? They see themselves, you know, they're going to be extinct in a few years. So doing the kind of show that I've been doing for 20 years, man, I wouldn't stop doing this for all the tea in China, man, for love or money, baby. I love what we do. I love it. I love it. I love deconstructing media. I love satirizing it. I love satirizing the guests, the callers, the hosts. I love doing the whole thing, and that's what I'm going to continue to do. And the people that don't understand it or don't like it, they're the funniest ones of all to me. You talk about people whose brains have literally, the synapses, all of the neural pathways are like big bogs of ice on those people. So I'm digging it.
So you just ripped the whole radio business and ripped them an ass and everything.
Yeah, what are you going to do for encore, man? What does that mean? What am I going to do for an encore? I just spoke my mind.
Yeah, but you... Oh, man.
Oh, quit your worrying. What, are you afraid David's going to call? By the way, I don't want to talk to him tonight. No more calls from Mr. David G. Hall. All right, we had a Republican convention continuing this evening. There was a speech given by Clint Eastwood. I guess we sort of butchered that up, didn't we? Didn't we?
Yeah, we probably talked enough about Clint Eastwood. You know, talk about the old guy, the man.
Yeah, what about the one guy?
Yeah.
What guy, what man, okay?
The guy that they
nominated.
Romney?
Yeah, Romney.
Okay, we'll talk about him when we get back. How about that? We'll talk about Mitt Romney. We'll talk about what his chances are. We'll talk about what his world is going to look like. We'll talk about America. We'll talk about our great country. We'll talk about all of that on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We come back here. Our news and information hour, more straight ahead. Oh, I want to talk about Tom Brady. What's the guy's name?
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, yeah. going to say
Truth
Tom Bradley.
He's our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Well, he was black, too.
So?
Look, Tom Brady ain't black.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Get Joe Dickhead on the line. That's the only guy we can...
What?
You got to get Joe on the line because he's the only guy that's going to be able to answer this unless you guys want to do, unless maybe Dan can do a little homework. All I need to know, Dan, is how many Super Bowls did Tom Brady win? That's all. Because I believe, and I don't own a pro football team. I'm not Robert Kraft. I have nothing but the greatest of respect for that man. Because that's a guy that knows how to put a football team together. Let me tell you what.
Man, Robert Kraft, he got the best football. New England Patriots, are you kidding me?
Patriots are badass. Badass. They are badass boys. And, you know, the Patriots, the Steelers continue to be a great team because they just continue decade after decade. You know, when you're winning Super Bowls, man, in the 70s, and you're winning them again in the 90s, and then you win them again at the turn of the century here in the 2000s.
What about in the 80s? They didn't win nothing then.
Yeah, you can't really say.
Oh, well, whatever, man. I'm just saying that the Steelers have established it. But the New England Patriots, no question that these boys are tough. And it started before Brady got there. You have to remember, even though they did not win a Super Bowl, or did they? Did they win the Super Bowl? No, the Broncos beat them. Yeah, the Broncos beat them. Here's the question. The question was asked, and the question was answered by Robert Kraft. He said, I believe that Tom Brady is maybe the greatest quarterback in history. I know he's better than Joe Montana. And I think that's a fair statement to make. I don't take any great offense to that. Being of Joe Montana's generation, you know, I would, even though I was a Rams fan growing up, and was a Rams fan when Montana played, and I saw Joe Montana play many times at Anaheim when the Rams were still here in L.A. I saw Montana kick our ass many a day.
Ha, ha, ha.
What are you laughing at, man?
Yeah, I think it's funny.
That you're not a Ram fan?
No, I don't even know who to... I don't care.
You guys weren't old enough, but... believe me when I tell you, I went to Anaheim, man. It was like, oh, here we go again with Montana. We're going to get our asses handed to us. He's going to find a way to kick our ass. And he did. Kate, Tom Brady won 3, Joe Montana won 4. So I'm sorry, and I know that people are going to say the following. They're going to say, oh, defenses are tougher, and defenses are smarter. They're tougher to read now for a quarterback. A quarterback has to do a lot of checking off at the line of scrimmage that you didn't have to do half of that when you were quarterbacking in the 80s. I don't know that any of that is true. I know that there's no question the players are probably quicker and the players are no doubt bigger. I don't know whether or not the offenses and defense have gotten that much more sophisticated. But when you're talking about, there's something else that people don't mention. Yes, the players are bigger, but the quarterbacks are bigger. So the defenses are tougher, but the quarterbacks are also tougher. So if you are simply asking, well, which era is quicker and bigger and tougher, obviously the modern era wins. But that's not what you do. That's not how you compare the ability, the relative greatness of quarterbacks or any player in any sport. You have to compare them to themselves. You have to, in other words, look at what the environment is and how well they succeeded in that environment as opposed to the environment of the modern-day quarterback. And that environment also includes their own physical limitations and their own physical abilities and how difficult it was for a quarterback in those days to compete. Now, I'll give you an example. You know, Deacon Jones was a defensive end for the L.A. Rams at a time when you could do everything as a defensive end but tear a man's face off. And I'm not kidding you. You could put your hands up in his face. There was a thing way back in the day. This is probably even before Deacon Jones there was a player known as the Claw. This guy was a defensive end that would come in, and he would look like he was going to miss you. You're a quarterback. You're dropping back. Keep in mind, there was no face mask in those days. A guy's running in, and he could stick his hand onto your face and see if he couldn't rip your entire face off by getting a finger up in the nostril, or getting maybe sticking one in your eye. I'm not exaggerating either.
Man, are you kidding? That's like an animal or something.
That can't be legal.
Well, they outlawed it eventually, but it was legal for a while. Now, my question is this. Not, do you think that player's better? No. Was he as big as today's defensive ends? No. I forget the guy's name. Played for the Bears. Doug something. Was he as big as today's defensive ends? No. Was he as fast? No. Was he as, you know, no. But you have to compare within the environment. He played in an environment, and that quarterback played in that environment, where when he dropped back to pass, a guy could come along and peel your face right off while you're still standing there like a dumbass with the ball in your hand, and the next thing you know, you got no face. Maybe you don't have an eyeball. You know. Jones used to say that he would see if the offensive lineman would turn his head just enough so that he could take his finger and jam it in the guy's ear as far as it would go in. Maybe even try to bust his eardrum. They did this kind of stuff.
Now, you're out of your mind, man. That's like a personal foul.
Not back then. It wasn't a personal foul. It wasn't a personal foul. You could put your hands. And the offensive lineman could only block with his arms within his shoulders. You couldn't extend your arms out wider than your shoulders. You had to keep them inside your shoulders, and you had to keep them below the head. So look at that space that you are allowed to keep your hands as an offensive lineman. Meanwhile, you got a defensive end coming in that can slap. You know, Jones was known as the head slap guy. He used to say, Jones he talked about Gale Sayers saying, give me, you know, a few inches, man, just open that line up a few inches, and I'm gone. I am through it, and I'm gone for a touchdown. And Jones used to say, all I need is a half a second. And he got that half a second by slapping the offensive lineman's helmet, what he called a head slap, and that would disorient the guy just long enough for Jones to get by him. Now, I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, with all honesty, I know the quarterbacks weren't as big. I know they weren't as fast. I know they weren't. But in their environment, and of course, Joe Montana didn't play in that environment. He played in his own environment. He played in the environment at a time when the rules were what they were in the 80s and the 70s. And I think by then, by the 80s, the bump and run was reintroduced. They had outlawed the bump and run, I think. They tried to make the zone defense more prevalent. They were trying to slow down the offenses or a little bit in the 70s. The bump and run was outlawed. The zone defense became the default defense, and it just absolutely suffocated. It smothered the passing game. The zone defense was the most boring thing to come along in football, and it suffocated the passing game. But it improved the defenses. I think they got rid of that, and they allowed the bump and run again in the 80s. So you were again back to these stellar defensive backs like Lester Hayes, I'm trying to think of the great ones, Ronnie Lott and guys like that. So I think the only way to judge is the championships. And Montana won 4.
No, man, but they weren't as tough to win back then.
Now, here we go again with that. See, you know?
Yeah, but they weren't, and Brady won 3. That's almost like winning 4 back then.
See, here we go again. You guys didn't hear one thing I said, did you?
What?
What I just said, man. You know, what I'm saying is, while there are bigger players and faster players and better defenses, there's also bigger and faster and better quarterbacks now. So it cancels itself out. You can't say, oh, wow, the defenses are better now. The quarterbacks are better now.
Yeah, so you're saying that Brady's better.
I'm saying Brady is physically a better, more dominating guy than Joe Montana, but I am not saying that Joe Montana faced any less difficult competition. You don't understand what I'm saying. I'm saying that the competition for a Joe Montana in the 1980s was every bit as brutal as it is for Tom Brady today. And as I said to you earlier, there was a time when quarterbacks had to contend with all kinds of stuff that a defense was allowed to do that a guy like Montana and Brady would never... They wouldn't be able to stand in the pocket for. They wouldn't be able to stay in the game, you know.
But you talk about that one guy that peeled your face off.
Yeah, just for starters. So, I have to go with the Super Bowl championships, and I got to go with Joe Montana on that one. Brady's won 3. Montana's won 4. If Brady wins another, I'll say Brady's better than Montana. How's that?
No, that'll only be 4.
I'm saying that I'll give you guys your. You know, I'll go ahead and give you what you are asking for, which is Brady better than Montana? Yes, he is. if he wins four.
Yeah, that, okay, if he wins this year, then you got to say it on a radio.
Fine, I don't have any problem with that. I'm just being, you know, I'm just enjoying the conversation. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with more on our news and information hour. Here, the world famous Phil Henry Show. I actually looked up because during the break we started to talk about the, you know, we were just talking about Ed Sprinkle is the name of the guy who did the claw. This guy was a, you know, he was an animal, you know, and I shouldn't say an animal.
Yeah, he clawed a guy's face clean off.
Well, I don't know if he, I'm saying that that was the effect, you know, the fear, the whole idea was to strike fear into an opponent. And this guy, Ed Sprinkle, who I believe, Dan, was a Chicago Bear. Am I right or am I wrong about it? I think he was a Chicago Bear. Yeah, he was a Chicago Bear at a time when the Bears were, you know, one of the feared teams in the NFL. And the fear that, you know, you'd put into a guy coming into the backfield and just going ahead and peeling his face off, or the, you know. So I said to Dan during the break, and I said to you guys, if you take a guy from the 50s, a quarterback like Norm Van Brocklin, take him when he was 21. You put a 21-year-old Norm Van Brocklin in a professional backfield today with his arm, with his brains, and with his size, he's still going to be really challenged. No question about it. I doubt seriously if he would be anywhere near the legendary stature that he was in the 50s. Maybe, but I think he'd really be tested. I will say this. Norm Van Brocklin had a lot of guts, and he had a lot of... he was a game guy, so, you know, it would take a lot to discourage him, but he'd be very challenged. Tom Brady in the 50s. Take Tom Brady. Put him in a backfield and have guys coming in on him wearing a helmet without a face mask with their hands out, ready to peel his face off by sticking a finger in a nostril or clawing across his eyeballs. Now, how good is Tom Brady then?
Yeah, but that'd be a penalty.
It wasn't a penalty then, bud.
It wasn't a penalty then, man. That's what he's saying.
That it should have been.
Sure, it should have been. There's a lot of things that should have been, but it wasn't. So that's all I'm saying. Vernon Dozier is a football coach, a high school football coach, but he coached briefly at the professional level, Vernon, didn't you, in the USFL?
Yeah, Phil, that's right. I coached for the Portland Breakers for a brief time. That was after they'd come up from New Orleans.
Okay, and you coached the high school level, college level, briefly?
That is correct, yeah.
Did you see this kind of play, this kind of... now, I don't want to talk about players that break the rules necessarily, but this really physical and intimidating kind of play?
Well, I got to be honest with you. I don't think that you intimidate professionals. Professionals are not intimidated by pushing and shoving and putting your finger in somebody's face. That's not what intimidates a professional. That may intimidate the college players or high school. We coach at the high school level now, and I see our guys get a little bit nervous when they come up against somebody's teams, somebody's kids that might get, you know, swagger a little bit. But I tell my players, I said, the best way to intimidate another team is to perform on the field. When you reach the professional level, it's going to take a heck of a lot more than pointing your finger at somebody and, you know, that kind of trash talking. But I will tell you that all of the things you described, whether it's clawing a man's face, whether it is sticking a finger in the ear hole, whether you're trying to slap, whether you're trying to get a shot in, there's all kinds of nasty stuff that goes on. There's guys today, you know, Phil, that are lifting weights. They've got all kind of power moves, and some of them are lifting weights to a degree that there's real danger of breaking a man's arm, breaking a man's leg. I've seen guys lose get an arm broken or a wrist broken, when they lock inside.
Are you talking about offensive linemen?
Yeah, I'm talking about, for instance, the line play. When you get an offensive lineman going against a defensive tackle or defensive end, and they get locked up, maybe you've got a defensive end who's trying to do a little bit of a power move where he does a swim motion, you know, where you put your arm over top of the block of the offensive lineman, call it a swimming motion, and push back. Sometimes you get that hand or that wrist locked up. Now, if you have a defensive man's arm or wrist locked up, it's a temptation, and it's not only a temptation, it might even be a wise move to just sort of push your elbow and your shoulder forward and until you hear that snap, you know. And
until you hear what snap?
Well, until you hear the, you know, you hear that man's arm snap. And
oh, good God.
Yeah, but I mean, you see, you're talking about a professional game. You're talking about men who are playing this for a living. You've got a wife and you've got kids to feed, and you've got a house payment to make. So let me ask you a question. If you know that your children eating, your wife eating, a house payment, a car payment is dependent upon you keeping your job, and you've got an offensive, defensive lineman that's going to try to do a swim move over you or some other power move, and you're able to get that elbow down and you get that wrist inside, and now you've got that arm of his locked up, are you telling me you're not going to go ahead and push it another couple inches and just hear that snap?
So you're telling me that you're going to break a man's arm on purpose?
I'm telling you, you better believe it. You better believe it. This guy was stupid enough to try a power move on you that a third grader could see coming, this classic swim move. Now, I know five different ways to stop that move, and I know five different ways I can teach my offensive lineman to break that man's arm in two places. The only thing that I tell my kids is this. You've got to gird yourself for the scream. And
whoa, hold on for a minute. Are you teaching your high school kids this?
Phil, every time I talk to you...
No, you were telling me a moment ago, you were telling me about the professional and gird yourself for the scream.
That's bitching.
Shut up, bud, will you?
Well, it's not bitching, as you call it, Mr. Dickman, but...
But it's Dickman.
His last name's Dickman. Bud, just shut up for a minute, okay?
Yeah, but that's bitching. You hear the snap and the scream.
Yeah, how long does it take?
Well, no, what do you mean, how long does it take? If you see a guy...
Hold on for just a second here. You're talking about high school kids, right?
I'm talking to you about offensive line play, controlling a pass rush. You got a quarterback that may be worth millions. Let me ask you a question, Mr. Henry.
But I thought we were talking about high school.
Let's forget about that. Were you talking to me about football or not?
Yeah, but I just want to know, are you teaching high school kids this?
Let's forget about that for a moment. Are you talking about football or not?
Yes, sir.
Are you talking about the professional level? I thought that's what you were talking about.
Yes, I was.
All right. If I got an offensive lineman and I got a quarterback that's worth millions of dollars, and if that quarterback gets hurt, guess what? All of a sudden, the owner, when he or she or it comes down to the locker room to talk after the game, to console the team after we've been beaten 58-3, okay, and they don't decide to stop in the coach's office. They just keep walking right on by, and they'd rather talk to some big, huge guy, stark naked, full frontal nudity. They're going to talk to him while he's got all of his business hanging down, and I'm sitting there waiting for them to come in and give me some words of encouragement. They walk right by my office and talk to a guy with his business hitting the floor. Okay? That's humiliating. All right? And the way to avoid that is to protect that quarterback. And the way to protect that quarterback is to neutralize that pass rush. And the way to neutralize a pass rush is to lock that man's arm up, go ahead and give it that extra couple of inches of pressure, and when you hear the bone snap once, beat, two, three, four, snap again, and then the scream, you've done your job for the afternoon.
Good God Almighty.
Oh, will you stop it?
Yeah, that's the job you got to do.
Yeah, that's professional football, man.
That's exactly right. That's professional football.
And then you hear the scream.
That's right. That's right. Let me tell you something. Because I talked to Lawrence. I talked to Lawrence Taylor. You remember when Joe Montana got his leg snapped in that way that they done it on Monday night? See, I used to be a defensive player, so when I saw Montana's leg break, I got to tell you, I felt for the man, but at the same time, I felt there was a certain pride I felt. And
when Joe Montana's leg, that shin breaking, that was the most, oh, God, that was gruesome.
Yeah, it was gruesome, too. But when I saw it, and I talked to Lawrence Taylor, and I said to him, I said, Lawrence, you got to tell me true. I said, did he scream? He said, yeah. He said he screamed he said it was like Tarzan. I said, no kidding. He said, yeah. I said, what do you mean? He said that when Montana's leg broke, he heard, is that right? Hey, Wendy, come on in for a minute. Do we have the tape recording there?
What is this?
This is Lawrence. Do you have that, honey? Yeah. Lawrence Taylor, I had him on the phone, and he did the sound of Joe Theismann when he got his leg broken. Let me put that on for a minute here. Okay. Lawrence Taylor, this is Greg.
Wait, that one.
What did it sound like? Did you hear that, Phil? I don't know if you heard that or not.
Yeah, I heard that. Was that Lawrence Taylor?
Yeah, that was Lawrence Taylor on the phone with me. And I said, go ahead, tell me true. He said it was like Tarzan. And I said, no kidding. He said, yeah. I said,
what, you know, I got to ask you something here at this particular juncture, Vernon.
Okay.
You get a kick out of that, don't you?
Well, let me tell you something, Bill. I don't get a kick out of a man being hurt. I really don't. But when you make your bread and butter as a defensive player and you know that you've been able to take a quarterback and pretty much stand him up against the wall, you know, it's good. So,
That must have been Mr. Dozier pretty good.
I'll tell you, buddy, it was very good for me in my playing days.
Do you ever break a man up?
I busted up a few guys, yeah. I busted up.
What position did you play?
I played strong safety. And I like to play the run. You know, strong safeties play the pass to play the run. But I love to play the run. I loved it. I loved it when they came at my side. I loved it because a strong safety sometimes will alternate with free safety. But when they ran at my side, I fell in love with that. I would marry that. I would marry that moment when they ran to my side because I had no problem standing a guy up straight. I'd love it.
You never feared injury?
No. You don't fear injury. No. Here's what you're afraid of. You're afraid you're going to kill somebody. That's what I'd be afraid of, that I was going to kill a man and go to prison for it. You know? So
that's so great.
Yeah, man, do you have any game film?
I got some game film I can show you guys sometime, yeah.
Okay, Vernon, thanks a lot.
Wow.
What?
What do you mean, what?
That's great. He sounds like he had a great playing career.
He sounds like he's half nuts.
Why does it sound like that?
Jeez, man. Talking about how you want to stand a guy up, you fell in love with the moment that they ran it to your side. And a million other things that he described, and breaking a guy's arm, and that Joe Theismann screamed like Tarzan in the jungle. Oh, my God.
That's what a defensive player live for.
Yeah, you got that. If you can't take the heat, man, get out of the kitchen.
Oh, well, okay. Thank you very much, both of you, for enlightening me as to the big, bad world of football. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Oh no, Joe Theismann is hurt. Now it's time for Iron Swine. The Iron Swine is going to go to the stadium, and they're playing football, and it's Joe Theismann.
Yeah, Iron Swine goes back in time on this episode of Iron Swine.
Hello, Iron Swine office.
Yeah, we're at the football stadium, and I think Lawrence Taylor's going to sack Joe Theismann, and his leg's going to get crooked.
Oh, you mean they're going to snap on a shin?
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, Iron Swine, man, you better get over there and get Joe Theismann's leg straight.
On my way. And Iron Swine goes to the stadium right at the time where Lawrence Taylor snaps the leg. And Joe Theismann is in such pain, this way he sounds like... Where's Jane?
Iron Swine, man, straighten out Joe Theismann's leg.
Because that's what Joe Theismann sounds like.
Yeah.
So, okay, Joe, hold on, buddy. This way I'll straighten out your leg and you'll be able to do all them commercials with Kathy Lee Gifford or whatever her name is. Here we go. You ready, Joe?
Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah!
And he straightened his leg out. Hey, Iron Swain. Hey. And years later, Joe Theismann is doing, like, Coleman Cooler commercials and stuff. Isn't that what he does?
Yeah.
This edition of Iron Swine brought to you by Coleman Coolers. Here's Joe Theismann. They're good. What?
The most ridiculous Iron Swine I think I've ever... Yeah, Iron Swine went back in history, huh?
Yeah, went back in time, man.
Went back in time and straightened out Joe Theismann's leg.
And he's in such pain, he sounds like... who was it?
Tarzan.
Tarzan. All right, let's not make any more. I guess you can make fun, as they say, that comedy plus pain equals time. What the hell is it?
Yeah, comedy equals pain plus comedy.
Yeah.
Comedy equals pain plus comedy. No, it isn't. It's comedy is pain plus time, or tragedy plus time.
Is that it?
I think that's what it is, yeah. So in the case of Joe Theismann, that was a horrible thing that happened to him, but it's now well over 20 years ago. And who was the guy that was on The Real People, or what the hell was that show? There was a show on called That's Incredible. Anybody remember that show?
Yeah, I remember. I'd seen that in rerun.
Who was the guy on that show?
That's Joe Theismann.
No, it was not Joe Theismann. Fran Tarkenton. Fran Tarkenton, that's who it was.
Who's he?
He was a quarterback, man.
Yeah, he's the quarterback that they wanted to kill.
Who wanted to kill?
You said they wanted to kill him.
Well, Fran Tarkenton was one of the original scrambling quarterbacks. And he scrambled about as well as anybody ever scrambled. Even to this day, I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback scramble like Fran Tarkenton. Always scrambling just enough so that a receiver would get open and he would wind up hitting him. And Fran Tarkenton was one of the most brilliant at this kind of thing. But I remember a couple of defensive linemen were interviewed. One of them was Merlin Olsen. I don't know, Mean Joe Green, cats like that. And they were saying, oh, God, we wanted to hurt him. Because, you know...
Why did I want to hurt him?
Well, when you got this squirrely little guy, this squirrely little cat that's running around and you can't quite get him, God, all you want to do now is pound him into the dust, you know?
Yeah, that had pissed me off.
Yeah, so they were saying, man, that guy was so hard to catch, like a greased pig, that when we finally did catch him, sometimes the temptation was to just dish out a little extra punishment. I don't know what that meant, you know, you get him down in a pile and just start wailing on him.
Probably like kick him in the you-know-what.
I don't know, but the reason why I brought all that bull crap up is because those two guys, for some reason, they get confused in my mind because they were both on TV shows, weren't they?
Yeah, it's, you know, Fran Tarkenton, man.
No, Joe Theismann does Coleman Coolers.
Coleman? You mean Coleman?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, but I thought there was a TV show. Who did Real People, man? Remember that?
Yeah, I remember Real People. That was
That wasn't no quarterback or nothing.
They didn't have a quarterback on that show?
I don't think so.
I thought they had like an athlete or something. Well, maybe they didn't. But that's incredible. Yeah, that was Fran Tarkenton. That was the quarterback. I thought Joe Theismann did something.
No, he Joe Theismann married like a lady that was on a show like that.
Yeah, Kathy Lee Crosby, I thought, is who he married. I don't know. Who the hell? What do I know? Forget it, man. So anyway, but those are two guys there. Theismann especially and Tarkenton. They went on to become pretty... you know, colorful guys, man. They had careers beyond the gridiron as television personalities. When I was in England, I was in London, and I was watching TV one morning, and they have a show in London called Good Morning Britain. I guess it's a national show for the whole...
Yeah, it's like Good Morning America?
Yes, except it's called Good Morning Britain.
But it's like Good Morning America.
Yes, it's exactly like Good... Well, it's not exactly... It's like Good Morning America. It's Good Morning Britain.
Yeah, but it's about Britain.
Yes, bud.
Don't you get it, man? It's called Good Morning Britain. What do you think it's going to be about?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's like Good Morning America.
Good Morning America?
Yeah.
Good Morning America. And it was like Good Morning America. So anyway, their weather guy on Good Morning Britain was Jimmy something or other. This guy used to be a soccer player.
Yeah, you like a Fran Tarkenton or something?
Yeah, you know, he's a former athlete, and now he was a former athlete, and he was a former big... grit, you know, a soccer star, what they call football over there, which quite frankly makes more sense because our game of football has nothing to do with the foot except for kickoffs, punts, and field goals. But anyway,
there is Joe Theismann there with superbeta.com. It's about keeping your penis erect.
Will you shut up? Yeah, Joe Theismann's doing, so he's doing commercials for male erection.
No, man, it's about the prostate having to get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Joe. I feel so young. Anyway, Theismann's about my age, too.
Really?
Yeah, he's about my age. I think Joe Theismann was graduated about when I would have graduated, had I graduated, which I didn't graduate. Okay, so that's, I don't want to talk about any of this stuff anymore, you know.
Tell everybody about the game.
All right, I'll tell them. Folks, don't forget our podcast has dropped, episode 37 of the Free Phil Hendry Podcast. You can access it by way of our own website there at philhendryshow.com by going to the podcast, by the podcast banner, or go to iTunes. Also on Monday, it is the Milwaukee Lions versus the New York Pets game time at 1 p.m. on Central Daylight Time, yeah. And the Wang radio call will be on our Phil TV in HD on our website. Also, on Tuesday, it is the ever so best of Bobby Dooley, and that will be a new offering of downloads in the shop at philhendryshow.com. So some fun stuff ahead for yous. And until tonight, let that be a lesson to you.
Woo!
Phil Hendry.